Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. I'm very pleased to be joined once again by Ryan Goldhar, who is a film and television producer in Canada and an agent with the Characters Agency out of Toronto. Ryan, thank you so much for being back on Lake 88.
Thank you so much for having me back, Bob.
We are talking about, I guess, the job action that is taking place in Hollywood. We initially had you on. We spoke about the writer's strike. And at that time, you said, watch out, coming down the pipe is this actor's strike and then the Directors Guild as well. Well, the actors have started their job action, and now we're seeing a greater impact on Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing is, so the directors would have actually been first had they not come to their own deal. So the directors actually settled with the producers and came up with a new plan for their long, you know, the next negotiating period. But with the actors, there was just too much on the table for them not to take this action. There's just so many variables in regards to, it's not just wage increases, which is always a factor because you have to take into account inflation, and over the years, the amount of money an actor makes in a day, and I'm talking not the stars, obviously, but those day players, those guys who have one scene, those guys who are even a guest star, but they have one day on set, they only make this amount of money. And if that's the only job they do that year, you know, they could be walking away with a whole whopping salary of maybe $1,000.
That's a really good point, because a lot of people don't necessarily, they hear actors are on strike, and a lot of people will sadly say, well, I mean, they make millions of dollars for everything. But I'm really glad that you brought up those day players and so on. And that's what we see in a lot of Canadian productions, like in Eastern Ontario and throughout.
Absolutely. And that's actually the majority of the roles that we get up here is those roles. The supporting, but they're not the leads. You know, if it's a big American feature or television series, the likeliness is that they're bringing in an American star to lead the show, and then they'll fill out the cast with some Canadians, usually namier, recognizable talent that you've seen in American projects that maybe they live up here, maybe they're just Canadian and live in LA. And then the rest of that cast is all local talent, whether it's local to Ottawa, local to Toronto, Vancouver, Halifax, Calgary, you know, wherever they're shooting across the country. So those day player roles are important. Now, we have a completely separate agreement up here in Canada. The Canadian actors are under ACTRA instead of what's in the U.S. The union is SAG-AFTRA, AF, as opposed to ACT. And those were merged unions a few years back. SAG and AFTRA became one. But the impact of what they are fighting for absolutely impacts what we will be fighting for down the road. There's obviously wage increases, minimums, like raising a per diem for someone who has to be flown across the country to shoot, and they pay them, you know, you'd think, oh, well, it's luxury. You get paid to just eat and feed yourself, but you have to feed yourself, right? So someone who is not in the place that they live, they're not given a kitchenette, they're not, you know, they're just in a hotel room, so there's no place to make their own food if they're gone a month. So they get a daily stipend, and that has to cover lunch, dinner, and breakfast. If you're eating, you know, like a normal person who's supposed to have regular meals a day.
Absolutely. And Ryan, you bring up a really good point there, because I recently saw the film Still, which is the Michael J. Fox story. And I think if anybody would like to get an idea of what you're talking about how they, especially younger actors, inexperienced actors, live. Michael J. Fox is a great example. Even as he was seeing his success grow on Family Ties, he was still, you know, living on a shoestring budget. And that is the type of person that these labor talks are trying to help as well.
Absolutely. And of course, like we said, the impact will be massive here in Canada. Like we are a service industry country, even though we have plenty of our own programming, Canadian produced programs that are written and directed and starring Canadians. you know, those budgets aren't the same as the big American shows that shoot up here. You know, like take into example, in the last few years, there have been shows like Chucky has shot here and the first couple of seasons of Reacher shot here. There's a few miniseries and features and so on. A few of the DC movies, Shazam and the Suicide Squad and Peacemaker shot out west. You know, like these are all impacted by... those are the kind of shows that would stop right now. Like even if they were in mid-production, they would have stopped because all of their leads are SAG members. And then all of the Canadians who are hired are, you know, technically, legally obligated to fulfill their contracts. But if their scenes are with those leads, they can't do them.
It's really interesting, too, when you look at it from the consumer aspect, because yes, there have been some great Canadian productions. There's also been some really entertaining Canadian shows. But unfortunately, I mean, they seem few and far between. You think of things like The Beachcombers, Degrassi, Danger Bay, Corner Gas, you know, shows like that, Schitt's Creek. You know, these are shows that are dotted along the Canadian landscape. But for the most part, we consume that largely American product when we reach out for our day-to-day entertainment. And if that ceases to exist, then what are we going to be left with? A whole bunch of reality, quote-unquote, shows?
That's exactly what's going to happen. The increase in factual and reality shows are going to spike. You're talking, you know, almost no writer's room because it's mostly on the fly, on, you know, like responses from, as they put in quotations, real people. Now you'll have competition shows like An Amazing Race and Big Brother and Survivor. They're all game shows in the end, even though they're considered reality. You'll have an increase in food shows. You'll have an increase in building shows and renovation shows. But you know, that's content people want anyway, but it shouldn't be what takes over everything.
Yeah, and it's content we want if it's good. You know, right. like the initial runs of Survivor, and even still, like, it's a show that works really well. The Amazing Race works really well. You know, there are a number of cooking shows that have gone through surges in popularity. The Iron Chef, you know, for example, these are the shows that are done well. But if we're now going to see like America's Next Second Best Baker from small town Tennessee, I mean, that's just not going to be as gripping as some of these other shows.
No, it's not. And the likeliness is, the reason they spike is because the hosts are non-union usually. It keeps the budget down. You know, obviously the contestants, there's no union. They're participating for a prize in any of those shows. Or if it's a renovation show, like the combination of the show helping, you know, pay for these renovations, but it's still the owners of these homes that, you know, are forking out some of that. You know, they've applied to be a part of this show so that they can get professionals who are really good at their jobs and showcase it. And they get, you know, maybe half of it's covered. And therefore that $1 million budget in their head becomes, you know, $400,000 or $500,000, which is a lot of money they've saved, but they get to, you know, have a new home. I mean,
yeah,
it's a great deal, you know, but it doesn't change the fact that that's the reason those shows have such low budgets.
No, absolutely. And another thing that I wanted to bring up with you, and we talked about this last time, as you very well know, Christmas productions are huge in our neck of the woods here around, you know, Elmont, Merrickville, and so on. I know that they're also big down around the Golden Horseshoe outside of Toronto and the Hamilton area, that type of thing. When we last spoke, we talked about how the writers' strike would affect that particular part of the industry. And you mentioned there are hundreds of these scripts that are waiting to be produced for Hallmark and W and that type of thing. But now we're at a point where, okay, you have the scripts, you have a lot of the players that you spoke about who are Canadian actors and so on, but the importance of getting that quote unquote big name, that Danica McKellar, up here to film. I mean, that part taken away, do they stop production on these things, or do they try to, you know, make it all Canadian, or is that considered sort of like crossing the picket line?
A lot of these productions actually go for Canadian talent right away. And there are a number of what we call like Hallmark Lifetime style actors who are in a pool. They're in their, let's call it a database. I mean, Candace Cameron Bure, although she's not, you know, working with those particular networks anymore, like she's a go-to and she's Canadian. So she gets to be a Canadian tax credit. Now, if she lives in Canada, it's not considered crossing the line. it's a very strange, we're in a very strange place right now, especially with Canadians who live in the United States, who like, well, let me just come back home and I'll work on actor contracts. I'll work on Canadian productions. And they can, but there's still a balance between what's happening right now, which is a Canadian who lives here, a resident of Canada, who is an actor member, who might also be a SAG member. They're a tax-paying Canadian. So they can work on Canadian productions and under those contracts. If it's a Canadian who is a ACTRA and SAG member living in the United States, but they are not a resident of Canada, like they don't pay their taxes here, they only file in the United States, but they maintain their citizenship, it's a little bit more complicated. And they sort of have to be cleared with waivers from the union. But the union is also, like SAG in particular, is very, very conscious about not wanting people not to work. And you'll hear in the news and on social media people talking about waivers being, handed out from the union. Well, there are waivers being given to performers to work on American and Canadian and worldwide productions because those production companies are actually willing to go by what SAG and AFTRA are after. They're willing to work with the asks that they have for the AMPTP, which is who they're on strike against with the studios. So there are some production companies and studios who are like, yeah, we'll pay you what you want. And so SAG is like, great, you're, you know, on board with us. And so people can work. But for the Hallmark and like for those Christmas movies, I really don't suspect there will be much of a slowdown. I think that they'll just bring in more recognizable Canadians who maybe they live in Vancouver, maybe they live in Toronto, but they're still shooting Ottawa. More and more are going to Newfoundland.
An Almont Christmas 2023 starring Ryan Reynolds. I can see it happening. Pretty exciting. Well, maybe
you'd
not.
You have to get a waiver.
No, exactly. Well, I mean, you make a really good point too, because a lot of these are international productions and these are huge, massive budgets and so on that they're dealing with. And losing a principal actor who's under contract or who may even have started shooting would be devastating to that production. In the last couple minutes that we have here, Ryan, if you could just sort of give us a broad-based look at the effect that these strikes have on Canada in general, you know, like sort of broad strokes, but also how it would affect a place like Eastern Ontario.
So we're still in a bit of a limbo here. We're as the strike is happening, as the negotiations or at least just talks at the table are happening, we ourselves are trying to find out where do we sit. Our actors are, you know, if it's any Canadian production, if it's a CBC production, everything is going exactly as it should be. People are working, there's crews, there's whatever, and it's happening. And they will be released on the CBC or on Gem or on Bell and Crave and whatever. But for the American shows that are shooting up here, for the productions that have a little bit bigger budget, that have, even if they're Canadian, but have brought in American SAG members to be in those productions, the impact is, what is the union seeing them as? Are they independents? The independents are going to really thrive in this current market because they are not attached to any studios. They are not attached to any distributors, any of the streamers. And therefore, if they're willing to play by the union's rules, then we'll see an increase in production up here because Canada is mostly independent. In regards to their production companies, because the budgets for our stuff is just so much lower. Our big budget stuff is what they consider low budget.
It's almost like we could benefit from it, but the Canadian way sort of has us going, well, you know, we could do that, but we respect the process.
We do. And the fact is our union is also very much in solidarity with SAG-AFTRA because, you know, they are, you know, sibling unions. And so they will support the strike and do, because obviously there is mutual things that affect us both. AI, for instance, you know, people getting scanned on set to be used later, but, you know, for what purposes? Yeah. You know, are they suddenly going to be an extra in another film? You know, like what are they going to be used for? There's rules that have to be defined right now. And that was part of the problem with the what we discussed with writers, is that AI in writing, well, it's the same with actors. I mean, if you use and scan someone's image and their voice, you can, you know, not pay them, because, you know, maybe you paid them like, oh, I'm going to pay you $500 and scan you and, you know, take a sample of your voice. And then the next thing you know, you're starring in a show that you didn't get paid for because you got paid $500 a year ago.
Or if you, yeah, exactly. And that could be at the beginning of someone's career. Then all of a sudden they have a couple roles that make them huge, but you know what? You paid that, you were paid that $500. Sure. So now we're using Ryan Goldhar in Commando 7 or whatever.
Sure. I will gladly star in Commando 7.
Excellent. Well, it's a developing conversation when it comes to the AI and of course, what is going on with the entertainment landscape in general. Can we call on you again, Ryan, to update us as this progresses?
You know where to find me in this strange moldy void.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan Goldhar, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here on Lake 88.
Thanks, Bob.
Our guest today on In Focus, Ryan Goldhar, who is an agent with the Characters Agency out of Toronto, and he is also a film and television producer. I'm Bob Perreault. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.